we had reached the top of the pokey thing, the pinnacle. Its roof was a slab of stone about twice as wide as I was tall. There were a couple of odd-looking devices up here, but no telescopes. "The telescopes are down in those domes," I said, "but you might not even recognize them as such." I got ready to explain how the new matter mirrors worked, using guide star lasers to probe the atmosphere for density fluctuations, then changing their shape to cancel out the resulting distortions, gathering the light and bouncing it into a photonemonic tablet. But she was more interested in deciphering what was right in front of her. One was a quartz prism, bigger than my head, held in the grip of a muscular sonde carved out of marble and pointed south. Without any explanation from me, Cord saw how sunlight entering into one face of the prism was bounced downwards through a hole in the roof to shine on some metallic construct within.
"This I've heard of," she said.
"It synchronizes the clock every day at noon, right?"
"Unless it's cloudy," I said.
"But even during a nuclear winter, when it can be cloudy for 100 years, the clock doesn't get too far out of whack."
"What's this thing?"
she asked, pointing to a dome of glass about the size of my fist, aimed straight up. It was mounted at the top of a pedestal of carven stone that rose to about the same height as the prism-holding statue.
"It's got to be some kind of a telescope because I see the slot where you put in the photonemonic tablet," she said, and poked at an opening in the pedestal just beneath the lens.
"But this thing doesn't look like it can move. How do you aim it?"
"It can't move, and we don't have to aim it, because it's a fisheye lens. It can see the entire sky. We call it Clesthera's eye."
"Clesthera? That's the monster from ancient mythology that can look in all directions at once."
"Exactly."
"What's the use of it? I thought the point of a telescope was to focus in on one thing, not to look at everything."
"These things were installed in Stonehenges all over the world around the time of the Big Nugget, when people were very interested in asteroids. You're right that they're useless if you want to focus in on something, but they're great for recording the track of a fast-moving object across the sky, like the long streak of light that a meteorite draws. By recording all of those and measuring them, we can draw conclusions about what kinds of rocks are falling out of the sky, where they come from, what they're made of, how big they are."
But as Clesthera's eye lacked moving parts, it didn't hold Cord's attention. We had gone as high as we could go and reached the limit of her cosmographical curiosity. She drew out her pocket watch on its rippling chain and checked the time, which I pointed out was funny because she was standing on top of a clock. She didn't see the humor. I offered to show her how to read the time by checking the sun's position with respect to the megaliths, but she said maybe some other time. We descended. She was feeling late, worrying about jobs to do and errands to run, the kinds of things that people extramuros spent their whole lives fretting about. It wasn't until we reached the meadow and the Decade Gate came in view that she relaxed a little and began reviewing in her mind all that we had discussed.
"So what do you think of what's-her-name's assertion?
Padagar?
That the legend of the Enchanters is trumped up so that the Pangendrums can control us?"
"Yeah, Padagar."
"Well, the problem with it is that the secular power changes from age to age.
Lately, from year to year," she said.
But I couldn't tell whether she was being serious. "So it's awfully hard to see how they could maintain a consistent strategy over 4 millennia, I pointed out. "From our point of view, it changes so often we don't even bother keeping track, except around Appert. You could think of this place as a zoo for people who just got sick of paying attention to it." I guess I sounded a little proud, a little defensive. I said goodbye to her on the threshold of the Decade Gate. We had agreed to meet again later in the week. As I walked back over the bridge, I thought that of all the people I had talked to today, I was probably the least content in my situation. And yet when I heard the system being questioned by Jezri and by Cord, I lost no time defending it and explaining why it was a good thing. This seemed crazy on the face of it.